Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And my husband and I talk it through to the point that I think we know each other and we know ourselves so much better than we ever have. And that just creates so much more connection and joy. I allowed myself to love someone else and realized it made me love my husband more.
Hey guys, welcome to Marriage and Martinis. This is Danielle. It's Sunday evening and Adam and I took a few days. We just went like 20 minutes away. Well, we had talked about it in the last episode that we were going to go away to New Hope just for two very, very quick nights. And it was really nice. It felt a little bit chaotic because we still have our boys at home and two dogs and two cats, and the logistics of all that is kind of crazy. So, you know, it was a getaway, but it was also sort of like back and forth figuring out how is everybody getting fed and who's getting driven where, when. And like, it was just kind of a lot, even though we were just 20 minutes away. So, you know, it's a getaway, but at the same time, you guys know there's still stress involved. Those of you who are parents with young kids, it like, you don't get to just go away. Same thing, I'm sure, with people with work and all the stresses that like kind of keep you connected to back home. But it was really nice. And while I was away, it was after I had done the interview with Molly Roden Winter on her book, More, a Memoir of Open Marriage. And Adam wasn't there for the interview. So I don't know, we talked a lot actually about a bunch of different stuff that we don't really get to talk about for as much as we talk. And you know, I was asking him about open marriage a little bit. And I had asked a few of my friends during the week when I knew the interview was coming up and everything. And I think Adam has more of a traditional view of, you know, monogamy. And he sort of feels like, I don't know, maybe it'd be really nice to have sex with somebody else, but also like the aftermath of it would be maybe catastrophic. Again, we talk about like that movie Indecent Proposal and the next day when they realize like, holy shit, what did we just do? Obviously a movie and, you know, for entertainment value in different circumstances. But I get that, all of that. And there's also a part of me that as sexually adventurous and as, you know, as much as Adam and I love being together intimately and everything, I won't lie, there is a part of me that will always be like, well, shit, I know there are experiences in my monogamous relationship I'm never going to have. Sort of like, you know, people who love to travel and they're like, well, I'm not going to get to go to every country probably, and that sucks. And you make peace with it and, you know, and enjoy all the places you do get to go. But at the same time, you're sort of like, I kind of want to see everything. And I feel like that. I feel like there is part of me that's like, I want to have all the experiences and, you know, and do all the things. And I don't want to be limited. So talking to Molly was very cool for me because I love hearing from people who have lived it and who can offer a perspective on, well, this is how you deal with the next day, and this is how you deal with the jealousy. And it kind of shifts the conversation to make it into something that is, it seems viable, it seems doable. Even if you're not rushing to do it, you're sort of like, oh, I get it. And so talking to Molly, and I have friends also recently in the last couple of years who have, you know, open relationships. And then I also have one couple who was in an open relationship and decided once they had kids that they were going to then be monogamous. So, you know, there's all different paths and we're each on this different journey. And the thing that I think is so cool about people like Molly and her husband, Stuart, are that ultimately they're like, listen, our needs and the needs of our relationship supersedes all of this other stuff that's holding us back, and what society is going to say, what our kids are going to ultimately think, you know, what our parents are going to think if they find out, like, all of these things. They're basically like, no, we are the core of our relationship, and that's what matters the most. And it was a very cool perspective to hear. So Molly and her husband, Stuart, opened their marriage back in 2008, sort of, I don't want to say on a whim, but it was kind of sudden. It wasn't something that, like, they had been sitting down and preparing for and communicating about on a ongoing basis. So they sort of worked backwards. They sort of like did it and then kind of like pushed through all the hard stuff and had to figure it all out. And it's amazing to hear. That was 2008. They are still in an open marriage. She walks us through the evolutions of it all, rules that they had at the beginning that they don't really have anymore. And I ask her what it was really like for her kids to find out. What was it really like for her parents to find out? All the things that we keep in the back of our minds and are sort of like, I could never do it because I wouldn't be able to deal with that. So anyway, the book is More, A Memoir of Open Marriage. It's fantastic. I love hearing these real perspectives and being able to sort of be like, oh yeah, that is kind of a real option that we could make work if we really wanted to. It's not something that you just hear about, but seems impossible. So anyway, please listen to this with an open mind. Know that everybody's stories and journeys are different. And I love the fact that Molly and her husband have put themselves at the center of their story. And we're sort of like, our needs and our intimacy and our connection is way more important than what those around us are going to think. And so screw all of that. We need to do what's right for us. And I wish that so many more of us would do that. And I think that this book is going to help give some couples permission to do what they thought maybe before wasn't permissible. So enjoy the episode. And if you love it, please, please, please go rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or if you've liked any other episodes recently, that would mean so much to us. Go check out Molly Roden Winter. She's on Instagram. You could check out her website and definitely go get the book More, because it is really a wonderful portrayal of this lifestyle that you come to understand from a completely different point of view. Enjoy. Hi, Molly.
I'm ready.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we just discussed you're in Brooklyn, so we're not that far away from each other, but Zoom is sometimes easier. So that is,
indeed
what we ended up doing, although it would be nice to meet in person. And you haven't always been in Brooklyn.
I mean, I've been in New York in the city for now longer than I've ever been anywhere else. So I lived in Manhattan my first 5 years, but yeah, I've now been here for 27 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And in Brooklyn for 22. But yeah, originally from the Midwest, from a Chicago suburb, and then, you know, kind of made my way east. Yeah. Michigan, upstate New York, and now the city.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I'm also wondering if you grew up in like a pretty progressive environment, like with More, I feel like the background for people to even explore this subject matter is maybe you had to be introduced to it somehow. I mean, we all sort of see it, you know, in shows and reality shows and all that stuff. But
yeah,
but do you feel like this type of like lifestyle and alternative lifestyles were introduced to you when you were younger?
What's ironic is that my parents did have an open marriage, but they never told me. And I did not know until my aunt told me when I was 28 years old. And it was still like when I talked to my mother about it for the first time, a year after that, after my first son was born, because it was just like the idea of talking to my mother about anything regarding sex felt like no way. So I did not grow up in a progressive home in terms of talking about sex. It was not a topic of conversation. But I do think my parents had, you know, progressive values, and they, you know, the fact that they were open to it in their own life tells you quite a bit, but it also tells you quite a bit that they would never have thought to talk to their children about it.
Right.
So, and we're kind of horrified when I said I was going to write this book, and, you know, you better let my sister know before I start writing the book, that kind of thing. Cause like they, you know, they had no intention of ever sharing this information.
Oh, right. You had, cause you weren't only sharing about you, you're sharing about.
Yeah. Them. Yeah. So I was like, guess what, guys? And I didn't exactly ask their permission. I more just asked their blessing, because I was like, this is what I want to do. And I knew that they believed in their own marriage and what opening their marriage had brought into their lives, but they also feared judgment. So, you know, I grew up in, it was a college town. Northwestern University is in Evanston. And my parents were both teachers in the, you know, the public school is where my father taught. And they were very, you know, integrated into the community. It does have a kind of city-ish feel because it's connected to Chicago by the L train. But it still feels very suburban. And I think there was quite a bit, you know, it was the 70s and early 80s when they were doing their exploration. And yeah, if you watch movies like, you know, The Big Chill or The Ice Storm or something set in those years, you get the sense that it was like all wife swapping and key parties and everything like that. But like, my parents didn't go to the movies, really. My parents didn't, you know, there was no internet. You didn't know what was happening unless somebody explicitly told you. You know what I mean? And so my mother talks about reading this book, Stranger in a Strange Land, as kind of her first introduction to this idea at all. And it kind of took fire, this caught fire, this book, but it was science fiction. It was about, you know, it was kind of about free love in this science fiction setting. So it's funny, like my parents grew up in a, you know, or were practicing non-monogamy, I should say. And I grew up in a milieu that was seen as kind of like, maybe it was a lot of free love happening, but it was not discussed openly.
Right, right. So did they think that they were like doing something innovative, do you think? Or they?
Yes. Uh-huh. It's funny that you asked that, because they actually did feel like they had invented something. And yeah. And what's funny is, as much as they talked about like, or kind of got anxious when I told them I wanted to write the book, they confessed that they had considered writing a book. But I think, you know, I need to ask them more questions about it. It never got real enough that they were actually going to, but they were kind of like, we should write a book. You know, right. We figured this new thing out. I'm sure they would have considered like pen names and stuff. My mother was suggesting that I might write under a pen name, or I might not, you know, fictionalize it. I might wait until she had died. These are all actual suggestions she gave. But I've kind of been coaching and working with them over the last really 5 years since I got the idea to write the book around, this is important, you guys. Like, this is the fact that we both feel this way about our experiences shows something. Not that everybody needs to do it, but just that there's more to the story than just, you know, it's not just sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You know what I mean? There is a personal journey of self-discovery that both my mother and I felt as we went through this, but her experience was different from mine. And I also wanted to honor and explore the ways in which it was different.
Have people been reaching out to her now, like wanting to interview her and stuff about her experience since it's public now in the book?
Yeah, well, my local paper, the Evanston Roundtable, wanted to did interview them
Oh
when
my
they did a
goodness.
review of the book. And they also got interviewed for the New York Times piece that came out right when the book came out. So that was exciting. But also, yeah, she sent me just the other day, she got a message from one of her old college friends who's also, you know, in her early 80s, who said, "Oh, I read Molly's book, and you're both so brave," you know,
Oh, yeah.
but said something to the, you know, my mother had, I think, really feared people's judgment. But this woman wrote to her, "You know, I don't know that I've ever done anything without worrying about what people would think of me." And it's so brave that you're using your name in, or your daughter used her own name and your name in this book. And I kind of like forced my mother to be brave. But once she agreed, she knows it's like it's okay. And I think it's been very validating for her getting this kind of feedback from her peers saying, like, wow, you know, you're writing about something that is not shameful. In fact, it's like kind of exhilarating, or that you're part of something that is making me think in fresh ways. Even her 80-something-year-old friends are saying this.
Yeah, and
So
it
it's cool.
obviously made their relationship in whatever way they needed it to. It made it last. It made it, you know, it made it more dynamic, or whatever their needs were. Same for you and your husband. Like,
Yeah.
it's not as if, look, even if it didn't work and, you know, they didn't wind up together or whatever, it's still not a
Right.
shameful thing. It's just, it didn't
Right.
work. But at
Right.
the same time, it is sort of like you wonder how many, you know, partners out there are desperate to have these experiences and never do because the word might get out, or, you know,
Sure.
what people are going to think. And so obviously the more we open up the conversation, the more permission people feel to try it themselves.
Yeah, and I think the conversation has been open in the queer community for quite some time. And so I have a 31-year-old friend who's gay who's like, every time, you know, he didn't bat an eye when I told him I'm in an open marriage. He just was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, right." And he's been shocked as I've shared with him some of like the feedback, or the, you know, in comments on in articles and things like this. This fear that comes with heterosexual marriages being open. And I think it has a lot to do with gender dynamics. When you're in a same-sex marriage, or when somebody's non-binary in a marriage, you're not, everything's a negotiation. There's no default setting where, like, this is the way the woman will behave and this is the way the man will behave. Everything is kind of up for negotiation, as I said. And I think in heterosexual marriages, we tend to, I know this was the way things started in my marriage because it was what my parents had, at least on the surface, modeled. This is what the mom does, and this is what the dad does, especially when they're kids. And this idea of kind of subverting that felt revolutionary and terrifying to me, even though it turns out my parents had done it to an extent, although I don't know that they ever fully subverted some of the other gendered behaviors that I witnessed growing up. And I think that's why there's a lot of backlash around it in a heterosexual dynamic, because it's like, wait, if women start becoming sexual subjects and not just sexual objects, what will happen to society? And I think very good things will happen personally. It doesn't have to be in the context of open marriage, but I think women inhabiting them, their full selves, can only be good for society at large.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right. And so few of us learn about these, Well, even if we learn about them when we're younger, we don't see them as options for ourselves. You know, it's sort of like we know the path we're on and we are not to deviate from that. And so we don't even consider, you know, and then, like you said, as you get older, I think you start to realize time is of the essence, number one.
Yes.
Number two, you're sort of like, you're more in your fuck it stage and you're sort of like, I don't care anymore. Right.
Right.
And you start to maybe realize a little bit more that there's more going on in people's relationships and lives than meets the eye.
Right. That all kind of perfect or cookie cutter relationships that you may have idealized, that your friends start getting divorced, for example, or, you know, you start seeing the cracks in the armor and recognizing that there's a lot of facade out there.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Yeah. And it's interesting to me how you started. Like, I have a friend who is in an open marriage, not an open marriage. It's a long-term relationship. And they did a lot of talking about being in an open relationship before they actually went through with it. Like, it was sort of always on the table for them, you know, but your experience was a little bit different because it was sort of worked backwards, kind of. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, partly it's because of my own naivete. And again, it's so ironic because this is what my parents didn't even use the word open marriage when I even confronted my mother. My mother still called it an affair. So I didn't have any of that language around non-monogamy or ethical non-monogamy, consensual non-monogamy. I felt like, similar to the way my parents felt, like it was a grand experiment, not like this had been done before. And I don't think it hasn't been explored as nearly as much as it needs to be. I don't know when your friend started her open relationship, but when I opened up in 2008, it felt like I didn't know anybody who was doing it. So I think for me, it was more like a lightning bolt of desire hit me at the same time that I was feeling kind of a claustrophobia in my own skin, because the role of mom, my kids were 3 and 6 at the time, felt so confining that I was just kind of at a breaking point. And then I met this guy pretty randomly who just sort of set me on fire. And I was like, holy, what is happening? And luckily, I'm married to a person who found that kind of hot. And he also had told me before we got married, you know, I had had very few partners before I got married. I had one boyfriend all through college. I went to college when I was 16 and was still a virgin then. And so I didn't have much experience. And my husband was really the first person I dated after I broke up with my college boyfriend. And he was like, there is no way you're going to be okay with never sleeping with anybody else ever again. And I was like, what are you talking about? Of course I will be. And he let me know. He's like, you know, if you want to sleep with someone else, just tell me, don't lie to me about it. And he told me it was, you know, it was kind of a turn on. And we had done a little experimentation with more like what I would call swinging before we got married, with a couple trips to a sex club, a couple threesomes. And I decided it felt too anonymous for me. It didn't feel connected enough. And ironically, it took me so many years to really discover how to have connected sex outside of my marriage. I started to by the end of the story and more, but, you know, 6 years have passed since that book ends, and there's more stories afterwards. But yeah, for me, it was like, oh my God, I want to do this thing. My husband says it's okay. I'm going to just do it. And I didn't really want to examine what more was lurking beneath the surface, because I sensed there was something else there, but I was afraid to look at it. And so Moore sort of tells the story of those first 10 years where I did start looking at it as I was doing things, which is not ideal, but it's the way it happened for me. And I don't know, you know, I feel like whatever course your life is on, it's going to take its course. And my my biggest takeaway is that you got to pay attention and try to learn from your own choices, whether you term them mistakes or not. I don't think that's actually very helpful. I think it's all about paying attention, and therapy was a big help to me, and communication with my husband ended up being very important, but I don't even think I knew how to talk about it when I first felt the urge to do it.
Right. And that's the hard part, because I think without good communication, then it kind of it all, I mean, in a regular monogamous relationship, it falls
Right.
apart. So when you start
Right.
incorporating all this other stuff, like, it is important to, and you talk about honesty and how important it is, and that's something that all partners can learn from open relationships. And that dynamic is the fact that honesty is so important, and you guys have been really, really good about being honest with one another.
We have, but I also wanted to tell the like kind of sordid truth about how hard it was at first. And so, there were times during this 10-year period where I wanted him to not tell me the truth, and then would get angry at him for not lying better. And that's not healthy. But at the time, it was that I didn't think I could handle the truth.
Right.
And my husband would agree that it was real hard for me to handle the truth. But I hear even now about people in open relationships who sometimes feel like if they get jealous, their partner will say, "Well, you're not very evolved then," and kind of try to shut down the jealous feeling or say that's not, to kind of invalidate the feelings of jealousy. And in my experience, that is so much a part of the whole experience. And the way we view it now is that you tell me the truth. You don't have to tell me every last detail, and I'll try to let you know when it's getting to be too much detail. But tell me the truth, and if I have a reaction to it, it's not about whether my reaction is fair, right? It's not. My husband used to get upset because I would get angry if he told me something. He'd say, "Well, you told me to tell you, and then you're angry that I told you." But really, that anger was just covering up some deep insecurity. And he has to now, or and I have to do the same for him. When feelings come up, we have to help hold those feelings with and for one another. And we're not. The big rule is you can't say you're not allowed to have that feeling, or I can't deal with your feeling about this, so I'm walking away. We have to stick with the conversation until we work through the feelings together. And that can take some time. It's a lot more efficient now than it used to be. But I think it's a danger when we start, I think some people's criticism of polyamory is that people get a little self-righteous about it. Like, this is the ethical way to do things, but sometimes there's not a lot of space left for the pain and the negative feelings. And you're supposed to just be so evolved that none of it bothers you. But that's not to me the goal at all. I still get jealous. I still have some tough feelings, but the huge benefit is that now there is no way out except for through. And my husband and I talk it through. To the point that I think we know each other and we know ourselves so much better than we ever have. And that just creates so much more connection and joy.
Right. I guess one of the things that I was so interesting to me with what when you were telling the story is that you guys sort of had these rules set up in the beginning. Like, you had sort of this groundwork of, okay, these are the parameters, within which we're going to experiment, and we're not going to go outside of these. And obviously, as humans, human, you realize that, that's not as easy as it sounds. So I'm interested to hear about, like, how you came up with those in the beginning and how they've changed and evolved even to today, because, like you said, the book is, 6 years ago. So.
The big cardinal rule was no falling in love. And I believe now, looking back, that all the other rules were designed to prevent the falling in love from happening. So it was all designed to minimize emotional intimacy. So things like no sleepovers, or don't date someone you work with because then you would be spending lots of time together, or no dating someone twice in 1 week, or a number of things that could create intimacy. And I'm the one who generally broke the rule first. And it's like taken a lot of time for me to recognize partly what that was about. And I think it was me realizing I want intimacy. I don't want to do this without intimacy. I thought that what I wanted was like a sexual adventure, but what I really wanted was to connect more deeply with my truest self. And I couldn't do that through sex that wasn't intimate, And so there was a lot of fear for me around that. There was the fear that if I got intimate with someone and loved someone else, then I would want to leave my husband and my life as I knew it would end. There was also the fear, of course, that my husband would fall in love with somebody and then he wouldn't love me anymore and my life as I knew it would end. And so it all kind of came back to that same thing. What happened over time and this is sort of the trajectory of more as I went from that place of fear to the embodied experience of loving more than one person. So when I finally did really allow myself to love another person, it didn't end up lasting that relationship, but I still do love that person. The character, I call him Scott in the book because I'm trying to protect people's identity, but like I still love him and we still text from time to time or see each other occasionally. He ultimately wanted monogamy, so it didn't work, but I allowed myself to love someone else and realized it made me love my husband more. And it was this wild experience for me. And it still then took a little while longer for me to see and to feel that my husband loving somebody else did not detract from the love he felt for me, that in fact our connection is stronger than it's ever been. So it's very hard to convince yourself, let alone somebody else, that this is possible. Once you experience it, then you just know. But it's like most things in life that everybody has their own pathway to get there if they're going to get there at all. And it's not about me trying to convince anybody that this is so. But that's how it happened for me. And so once I felt it, I don't ever feel like I want to restrict. Now I feel very firmly polyamorous as an identity. I would never want to restrict somebody I love from loving somebody else. But it still is a vulnerable place for me. And so but I see the value in working through that vulnerability and the insecurity and the jealousy that still comes up sometimes. I feel the benefits more than think them. So having felt them, I can't really unfeel them. And so I feel pretty secure in that place.
Right. And now you've had practice and you've sort of worked out. Did you guys add any restrictions that you didn't in the beginning, or it's mostly been just taking stuff away?
Mostly taking stuff away. Now, the big thing we added was my saying, you can't say to me, I frame it in terms of the way I've stated it, but he says it back to me sometimes. You can't say, Molly, you shouldn't feel jealous. There's no reason to feel jealous. Yes, and I do feel jealous, so help me out here. That's kind of where we're at. Like, that's the price of admission. He does, like we do. We also, I think, over time, we keep choosing each other. And I know the ways in which he shows me he loves me and shows me that he respects who I am and what we have in our life together and my feelings, so that I don't feel like I have to, I don't feel a need to impinge his freedom in any way because I know that his freest self is also a self that loves me really well. So I don't want to impinge his freedom. At the same time, the price of that freedom is you got to keep taking good care of me, you know? Right. And so if I feel like you're not, or if he feels like I'm not, we talk about it and we move to a new place. But because of that, it's just, every time I think we've hit a ceiling of like, oh, wow, we've like grown as far as we can. Like the ceiling kind of opens up and we keep going. It's been pretty cool. So even in the, 6 weeks since the book came out, challenging things have happened where I'll say something in a podcast that kind of triggers him. And he'll say, even though I'm talking about maybe something that happened 10 years ago, it'll still bring stuff up and we'll kind of revisit it anew. So that kind of thing has been happening in a way that's actually been really, again, very rich.
Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me because, love is sort of like one of those things, one of those words that we use. It's for everything, right? Like in the English language,
right.
There aren't enough description words for the whole, romantic.
Yeah.
Love. Like, I love that cookie. Yeah, I love. And when it comes to like having kids and being a parent and everything, no, I guess, there's a moment when you think to yourself, like, am I going to love this second or third child as much as the first if you choose to have more? But nobody with romantic partners think, they don't say the same things as in like, look, you're not sucking up all the love for that one person because love isn't something that there's a limit on. And so it is an interesting concept, and it's an interesting concept that, we don't say that about friendships, and we don't say that about, all these other things. But when it comes to romantic love, all of a sudden it's like it's finite. It's finite. Yes. And so that is something that is interesting to me. And also everything you say about, the jealousy and all of that, I think when people think about opening up marriage, obviously you think of it from two perspectives. Wow, that would be so awesome if I was able to do that. And also, fuck that, I don't want that for my partner.
Yeah.
So it's like you're like you said, you have to sort of like weigh the positives and the negatives. And I think that there is this, we've so been conditioned to think that, it's cheating, like your mom still calls it fair.
Right.
And obviously there are lots of situations where
it's
in fact cheating.
But
I think that the idea of it sort of morphing and shifting, it causes people to sort of be like, I can love, like I don't have limits. There's, I do feel like when it comes to my kids, I love them infinity and all this stuff. Like, so I do think that we get all these mixed messages. And while we're moving forward in a lot, there's also some things that it's just going to take probably generations to, to get there.
Absolutely.
So I'm interested in, we were talking before, I have two teenagers and a tween, you have two grown kids also, like, and you do talk about when your son was he 13 when he found out?
And
of course that's, I think a lot of what parents, they're sort of like, well, I maybe would have an open marriage, but I have kids, they can't know. And they're going to think that we don't love each other anymore. And they're going to be like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So what was your experience with that? First of all, were you petrified about your kids finding out? Did you have a plan? And I know it didn't go according to whatever the plan was, but.
Right. The plan was to not tell them, just as my parents had never told me, and to maybe think about telling them when they were adults, but certainly not to tell them when they were still even in high school. That I there was no plan to talk about it. So when my oldest found out by, he saw my husband's dating app on his laptop, he thought my husband was cheating on me. And so he came to me and found out more than he wanted to, in some senses, that we had an open marriage and I was also dating other people. And there was, and it was hard for him at first. And he, even after I thought it wasn't so hard anymore, he has told me, you know, now that he's going to be 22 soon, but yeah, those first few years, it was tough. Mm-hmm. However, and my younger son also found out at 14, and it was tough at first as well. I also think, though, that being an adolescent is tough. And I think that parent-child relationships during those 2 years, teen years, tend to be tough. And I think what's part of why that is because kids are learning to define themselves as individuals. And sometimes that is bumping up against who their parents are or who they see their parents as. And it's a pretty universal human stage of development. So I also want to be careful not to over extrapolate and say like, oh, you know, I shouldn't have done that because it made things a little tough for them. In retrospect, now that they're 19 and almost 22, they come to me and talk to me about real stuff in a way that I don't know that they would have had we not grappled with some of these things when they were younger. And I do believe that we set the stage early on for honest dialogue with our kids. And you can't never have honest dialogue. And then when they're adults, expect them to have honest dialogue with you. I think that's part of the reason why in a lot of families, there is a strain between the generations, because I felt this with my parents and I finally broke the seal kind of talking about it. But even when I was 40, you know, 45, I felt like there were certain things I couldn't talk about and I couldn't bring my whole self to my parents in a way that felt authentic. And that's a big reason why I wrote about this in the book. Every single time, sometimes it happened as soon as I landed at O'Hare Airport. I love my parents, but I would get a migraine the second I landed because I knew there was a part of myself that I could not bring into that house, you know? And there was a part of my mother's self that she didn't bring to her relationship with me. And it felt like a huge wall, even though we were close in many ways. So I never wanted to have that wall between me and my children. I do understand the need for boundaries and for privacy and all of those things. So it's not like, you know, I'm running around doing whatever in front of it. That doesn't feel appropriate either. But I think there's a middle way that isn't easy and is constantly being navigated in how we connect with our children. But I think it's an important thing. And I hear, you know, I'm very proud of the relationship I have with my kids, but it has been difficult at times. And so, but I think that's part of it. I think we often prioritize a pain-free path, right? Let's not talk about anything messy or difficult. Let's just be happy. And that's not realistic. And so I feel like when you try to sanitize those relationships, and it happens in marriage, it happens with parents and children, when you try to like, oh, let's just focus on the good stuff. We don't need to talk about that messy feeling of yours. That's right. When we lose closeness and connection. And I want to stay connected to my kids so that they know I'm a person that can handle their whole self. And they also know they don't have to take care of me, that I take care of myself and my own needs. And they don't have to, you know, when my youngest went off to college, I cried. But then I stopped and then I've been having a really great time. And we can talk about that honestly. He's grateful that he can go have his full experience at college. And he knows I'm not just like, what are you doing?
I think, right. You know, have a full life. Yeah.
Yeah. Even the language around empty nesting is like kind of sad. It's like, I don't have an empty life. I have a full life.
Right.
There's still room for him. And I'm psyched. We're going away for a week in March during a spring break, you know, all four of us. And we're all psyched because we all get to do our own thing and come together. And yeah. That's the way we live. And I love it.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting also because, you know, you talk about like the fact that it put a strain on your relationship, was hard for a few years and everything. But also, you know, my mom and dad have been married for, I don't know, almost 60 years. Yeah. And, you know, my mom's, whenever a few of my best friends have recently gotten divorced, and, you know, my mom will react in a, also being 80 years old, like will react in a way that is, oh my God, I didn't see it coming and this and that and whatever. And, you know, I think there's part of her that has this, this mentality that is like, well, I succeeded. I never got divorced. And what I say to her in those moments is, I'm still in fucking therapy. Like, I may not have gotten divorced, but like, there was a whole lot of other traumatic shit that happened.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so we sort of hold these certain things, you know, maybe divorce or our, you know, our parents, you know, cheating or, you know,
right,
opening their marriage and everything.
Right.
As these sort of like deviations that are, you know, like going to be debilitating for our kids. But guess what? There are lots of, you know, what, I mean, I know very few kids that are like probably just, you know, going through life like, yeah, everything's great. And, you know, my parents have it, it's perfect. And like, no. So it's just so interesting that we, you know, we focus on like, this is going to be the thing that makes them. Right. And that's just so not the case. Like every family has their stuff. And again, every family has their secrets. And, you know, and like, and now sort of, you know, you don't have secrets. And that's a really good feeling too, because look, just like you found out it when you were 28, they most likely are going to find out at some point. Why not have it be in a situation where you can talk about it and everything? And so, you know, I guess my thing, my new thing is sort of like how we talk to our kids about things, you know, for instance, when my, you know, when my son did found out that one of my best friends was getting divorced, his first reaction was, oh, did they cheat on each other?
Yeah.
And I was sort of like, all right, dude, let's sit down.
Yeah.
Number one, no, but even if they did, like, you know, and you sort of have to approach all of it as these are all very like, no, it's healthy. They're still friends. They're still, you know, because once they leave your sphere and they're out in the world, they're getting all that other information. So, you know, it is how we react. If you hear that a neighbor is having an open relationship, well, how are you going to react to that with your kid? Are you going to be shocked? Or are you going to be like, oh, good for them. Like, that's great.
Right.
So a lot of that stuff, I think, happens by design also. And, you know, so I feel like
well
that's
said.
Something that we can all kind of do, whether or not we're in an open marriage or, you know, whatever it is. Like, that's a really good thing. Big way to start. And so like, do you think that now going forward, is there part of them that is sort of like, I don't know, maybe I will think about that in my own life, or are they not even there yet? Are they not even, you know,
well, I think,
I mean, they know now at least that it's okay.
Right. I think it's funny because, you know, like teenage kids are not like, oh, I want to be just like my mom and dad, Right. So like it may even be the opposite, that because we're like, well, I don't think I'm going to do an open marriage. You know what I mean? I'm like, that is just fine. You know, you do.
Like my kids
you.
Say, they hate podcasts. They'll never have a podcast.
That's right. Exactly. Whatever it is you're doing, they will want to do the opposite, which was partly why it was kind of horrifying for me. Like, I did not intend to be an English teacher either. I went to college thinking I was going to be a lawyer and, you know, because that was like the opposite of what my parents were. They were both teachers. And then I became an eighth grade English teacher, which is exactly what my mother was. And then I thought I was like dabbling in this open marriage world, and then found out like my mom had done it too. And I'm like, oh God, I've turned into my mother in spite of my best intentions.
Right.
So yeah, we're not talking about that yet. And I also believe there is something very, you know, beautiful and important about creating a real solid foundation. I'm still, you know, I know marriage isn't for everybody, but I'm glad that I am married. And I think that the foundation of our marriage was an important way for us to begin in a monogamous way, and then open it up once I, you know, the security was kind of already there. It changed and morphed a lot over the years, but like, yeah, I think just modeling for your kids that the way you are, also the way you are at 23, which is when I met my husband, might not be exactly the way you are at 51, which is my age now. And it's like, that's better than the reverse. You know, if I were still the same exact person I was when I was 23, that sounds like a nightmare. You know, I was so fearful and anxious and like worried about what everybody thought of me. And like, that's, I'm real glad to be past that or in a different place. So yeah, I don't know, but it was also funny. Like there's a scene in the book where I asked my therapist, it was after my oldest found out about the open marriage. And I said to him, like, do you think I'm screwing up my kid? And he was like, Molly, I think you're screwing him up the exact average amount. And it was just like,
perfect answer.
So good. Yeah. And I love that answer. Cause it's also like, no, the goal here is not to not screw them up. We're all humans. It is an impossible thing, and it's not the goal to create a perfect environment. As you said, things are going to happen, and you want to create space for a little bit of that turbulence and chaos so that when turbulent and chaotic and difficult things happen for your kid, you do not react as like, oh my God, I can't handle talking about that. You know, because you send a strong message when you
react,
how you react to things.
Yeah, totally. I so agree with that. Definitely.
Yeah. I want to be a safe place for my kids to bring all types of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Right. It's all fine. You can tell me whatever you want. And also to let them know you're allowed to have your own private life. And you know, I do encourage therapy and like, talk to your therapist about me. You don't always have to talk to me about me.
Totally. Totally.
You know, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's also just nice to know that there's, you know, that like what you were saying about being who you are now versus when you were back then, and you wouldn't want to be, you know, you were a mess. And I think most of us feel this similar about ourselves, but also like that you can, you know, you can change your mind. You can, you know, you can reinvent yourself as many times as you want. You can reinvent your relationship, right? I mean, you know, there's like, isn't it Esther Perel, I think, who says like, you can be, you know, you have seven marriages with the same person or something
right.
like that, you know? And so I think that it's also like a great thing for them to see like, okay, wait a minute. You're, you know, you're in your 40s or 50s or whatever. Okay, you're still alive. You still want to experience and do things, and you know, and that you can totally change it. And I have friends who were in an open relationship, and then they eventually decided they wanted to be monogamous again. And like, you know, and it's just like, it's nice to know that the whole idea is that none of us know what we're doing. And so why is one way better than the other? You know what I mean?
Amen. Hallelujah. Yes. None of us know what we're doing. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's all trial and error in life.
It's all a big experiment, and we're fucking it all up anyway.
Right. Might as well, like, right. You wanna be mindful so that you're not damaging. You know, I one thing I felt very strongly about with my kids is that I didn't want my journey to become their journey. And that was one of the kind of sensitive things in my book. I write about this because two of my mom's partners, led her into what I term a cult, and which she still would not term a cult. It's a spiritual, you know, in her vocabulary, it's a spiritual practice. I found it a little more suspect, but you know, that's also just different generations viewing yeah. Catholicism sometimes, you know what I mean? It's the same kind of thing in some ways, but she brought me into it. And I, as the people pleaser I was, followed at age 10. And really, I see it now as an adult, as that was an extension of her explorations, which started as opening her marriage. And all of that is like for her to have these explorations is fine. But I always felt like, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, introduce partners to my kids. I don't want to necessarily tell them, you know, I was extremely sensitive to that, and maybe even more guarded than I needed to be. I think as we normalize this, and, you know, I feel like it's kind of like when my husband got LASIK surgery, I watched him for a couple of years to make sure he didn't go blind. And then I got LASIK surgery, you know, it's like, there's a guinea pig nature to some of this. And yeah. I'm kind of like, oh, okay, my kids are fine now. Great. You know, and I'm also fine. It's, you know, we screw up our kids the exact average amount. So there's no one right way or wrong way, but that was one kind of like guardrail for me, trying to make sure that my experience didn't become theirs. And that's a little bit of the risk of my writing a book, for example, because I have entered the public sphere with this. I did change their names, and I try not to talk about them too much. And they are out of the house and living their own lives and not thinking a whole lot about what I'm up to. And it's great. But that was important to me, that I not like make this a public thing until my kids were launched. Yeah. Because I didn't want to have them having to navigate all this. And they might still have to a little bit, but I feel like they're equipped as adults.
Yeah.
You know, so that
I think that when there's a difference between, you know, exploiting and sensationalizing and telling a story, you know,
right.
And I feel like, you know, that's, we get that question, my husband and I, all the time with the podcast, like, what will you do if your kids listen and this and that? And I'm sort of like, you know, because it's racy and because we talk about it a lot and everything. And I'm sort of like, okay, we don't say anything bad about anybody unless they're like a politician or a, you know, like we don't, you know, we're not saying anything terrible about people. Like, we're helping people. We're trying to do something good. And like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to tell their inner secrets, of course, but they're my kids and they exist. And, you know, and I can't pretend that they're not part of the story.
Yeah. And you exist as a person. And exactly. I think that's a big part of it too. Like, recognizing as a woman, as a mother, I have a right to exist. Mm-hmm. And I want to model that for my sons, that I don't exist in an ancillary role to serve their needs. Like, at a certain point, the best thing I can do as a mother is to say, off you go, figure out how to do your own goddamn laundry. You know what I mean? And it's like, I still do a lot of laundry. I don't mind it. I kind of like, it does feel like my last vestige of intimacy when like they don't empty their pockets and I can be like,
what I find in here?
Yeah. I'm like, that's on you. You put it in the laundry room, I get to look in the pockets. But I do feel like there is something about, again, just as a mother, being a whole person who, I think there's more benefit to them as heterosexual adult males to seeing the full scope of who I am than there is that it's damaging. Like, oh no, I'm now, my mom is going to embarrass me. Like, you're fine. You can be like, they're not,
no matter what. It doesn't matter.
I know they were way more embarrassed when they were like younger. Now I mean, I feel like they, I'm a little cringy sometimes. Most of the time, they think I'm pretty okay. They still
Right.
like hanging out with me. It's
Totally.
all fine. Yeah.
I know I have to let you go soon, but I wanted to know, like, if there's one myth or one, one aspect of open relationships, open marriage that you feel like is out there that you would love to just, dispel or to say to people, like, no, this isn't the case, or, is there anything?
Yeah, well, I do feel like sometimes people, when they first find out, they like they think, this seems like an extreme misconception, but I do, it's happened more than once. It's almost like they imagine us having like orgies all day long or something. And I'm like, it's not like that. It's just like, it's way more just kind of woven into the fabric of our lives. In just like anybody that isn't having sex all day long, even whether they have one partner or more than one partner, it's not like the single people that who are dating or having sex all day long every day. I sometimes feel like they think there's going to be this highly sexualized environment as opposed to, no, we're just people. My husband sometimes jokes like, like he should answer the door. We've had a couple photographers coming over. He's like, should I answer the door in my robe? And it was kind of funny when I told him this name of your podcast, Marriage and Martinis. You know what I mean? There's usually like a robe and a martini in hand. It's like martinis become like shorthand for like, woo, let's get it on. Like they were gonna like Barry White music playing or like something like that, but it's actually just, we're just like
Regular.
just regular people. Most of our life is the same. And then there's this one, which is I think partly what is so, titillating and also anxiety producing for some people. Like, oh my God, if they're non-monogamous, anybody might be. Right? Like you thought you could tell by looking at them that they were, they were this way, but no, we're pretty, and I'm pretty vanilla in many ways, but for, some people's vanilla is another person's kink. You
Right,
never know.
exactly.
So that's kind of, I think that's the biggest one.
No, I think that's great, and it's so true. And I think that it's just so interesting, like that we think about, marriage as this very like, sacred thing, and like very, like almost like God created or something. And obviously, no, it was man, a man-made creation, and the
Institution,
rules are fucking fake. So
Yeah, it's, I think
I've
that's it. It's our binary thinking that there's like repression on one end and like full-on sexual deviance on the other, as opposed to like we can actually be healthy, sexualized people that integrate that into our whole selves, and one part doesn't have to come at the expense of another.
And if you're having orgies all day, fucking good for you. Like, great. Who cares?
I'm not a big fan of the orgy, though. I'm gonna just go on record right here. It's not
I'm
for
set it
me.
here, marriage
Great
and
for
martini.
you. I am not. Please don't invite me to, I mean, you can invite me to an orgy, but I'm going to say no.
You want to be invited, but you don't want to
Want to be invited anymore. Like you could. I'm not gonna get angry for inviting me, but just be aware it's gonna be a no.
I'm taking note of that.
Yeah,
My next
good. Thank
orgy.
you. Thank you. It'll just save you. It'll save you, the effort of trying to like send me the e-vite to the orgy.
Noted, noted. Well, the book is more, and it's fantastic. I loved it. I think that like the fact that you're even opening up the conversation more and everything is it is I know you it's like a cliche, but it is so brave. And and I do think it's so important, and I very much believe that vulnerability is contagious, and giving people permission is contagious. And so I think it's awesome, and
Thank
thank you so much
you.
for giving me some of your time to talk. And I think that your story is just wonderful. Like, it's a wonderful human adventurous story. And so thanks for sharing it.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.